You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo. With me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy baseball all-star break. We have the Home Run Derby starting in a couple minutes here. Actually, probably the most anticipated one in a while. Happy Marvel Week at the blog with Black Widow out this week. I'm sure many of you have seen it or are planning to see it. We've both seen it. Happy – what else we got?
Happy
TBT starting up at the end of the week. I don't know. When's Bayham's Army's first game?
The 16th, I want to say. Yeah,
probably, so we got that.
This is probably not the worst thing to start with today, really.
I couldn't remember because sometimes they like really like spread out this first round, and I couldn't remember if we are starting this weekend or next week. But that's exciting. We're starting to get some juice with the Syracuse plus roster we have this week, this year.
Honestly, I'm all about the, and I know we talked about this a little bit in the past. I'm totally fine with us expanding the roster a little bit, if only because while we made the one like Final Four, it hasn't necessarily been like the easiest ride. So realistically, like, I think I'd much rather try something different than just keep banging our heads against the wall trying to do the same thing over and over again, seeing if we get a different outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the sentiment that like we want it to be a Syracuse based team. But also, we've done that for years and years now, and that is to say that like it couldn't work at some point. But I do think they want to win one of these things at some point. And with Overseas Elite breaking up, being able to grab guys like DeAndre Kane for the roster, it just makes so much sense because they're like such, you know, experienced, valuable players, and they know how to win TBT. So yeah, I don't have a big problem with it. If it started to get to like where it was like, oh, there were like a handful of Syracuse players, and then like a bunch of other guys, you know, then it would kind of lose some of the luster for the Syracuse angle of it. But I mean, it's still like a 80% Syracuse roster. I think it's a pretty reasonable balance between the two.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it is a Syracuse roster. It is like the identity is still Syracuse. As we said before, I'd rather win with a handful of non-Syracuse guys than continue to lose with Syracuse guys just to say we did it.
We've also always had like non-Syracuse guys. Like we've mentioned before, like going back to the first year we were in this thing, we've always had like a guy or two that were, you know, added to the roster and play large roles. So it's not like this is like some crazy thing that we're doing this year that we've never done before.
And yeah, I've literally been trying to find like the schedule this entire time we've been talking, and it's impossible somehow.
That's not ideal for the televised event that we want to watch and promote.
Yeah, like I mean, I will say we've got a really cool bracket contest for people that have been paying attention to that. If you haven't joined yet, you still have a few days left to do that. I would highly recommend it. Good folks at TBT have some cool prizes for us, including a T-shirt. We have men's and women's available for the winner, and some cool Puma sneakers. That'll be released as well. You also get entered into the TBT prize pool that includes Bitcoin, some various other cryptocurrency related items. You can read all the full details on entry and all that on the post in the blog. There are a few, like, you know, Vox legal things that you might want to familiarize yourself with in advance, but still should be a really cool competition. I'm pretty excited about it, and I know a lot of other folks are too. The fact that none of us are overly familiar with all of these teams probably means that that we'll either all do very well or all do very poorly. There is no middle ground, as everyone knows at this point, with bracket filling out.
Especially for TBT, I feel like the last couple of years, you get like one dynamo team and like the 13 or 14 that just are there because people don't really know of them and they end up making a run. But also looking, I found we do not play Forces of Soul until the 24th. So it is next week.
Yeah. Well,
at 11 a.m. Central, 12 p.m. Eastern. So that is on Friday. No, I'm looking at the wrong month. That is on Saturday, July 24th. So yeah, so some teams start the 16th. Yeah, some teams start the 17th, 16th, and 17th. So there is some basketball for you guys to check out. But Bayhand Army will not be playing until the second weekend of this event. So looking forward to that. It always, you know, it kind of stuck up on us in some ways this year. But I do think we're starting to get like ready for it mentally. So that'll be fun.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as always. And looking forward, they haven't unveiled the jerseys this year, I believe, but in the past we've seen some fun ones that take inspiration from like past Syracuse jerseys. We've seen some script. We've seen some inspired by the 03 team. We've seen some inspired by some of the more recent jerseys. You know, last year's was kind of a unique to Boeheim's Army kind of font that's like based on the logo. Curious what they come up with this year. Every year though, it's been fun. So I know for the uniform files among us, that should be an entertaining unveil if it hasn't happened already. I don't think it has. So we might see those in the very near future.
Yeah, they always there are always some creative ones in the field in general. So whoever makes them has some fun with them. And I always appreciate the nods to like the great Syracuse teams as we've had the last couple of years, or at least, you know, in years in the past. So looking forward to that as well. I'm sure we'll talk more about that next week. But it's been a pretty light week in terms of Syracuse news. So no better time, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I know in Syracuse news, one piece of information that came out over the weekend, K.R. Price, he's from Wayne, New Jersey. We've got ourselves our second New Jersey player for this class. He's a defensive lineman, top-rated guy that we've brought in so far, three-star, picked SU over a bunch of other offers. A lot of the usual suspects, but nonetheless, you know, good to get wins over schools like West Virginia, Boston College, and the like. So I think at this point, like, we're in a pretty good spot defensively. I mean, again, like I we've said this before, the level of talent we might want to be a little bit higher, and it's no knock on the guys coming in, but having three defensive linemen probably means we're done there based on recent recruiting wins. I think the hope now is over the coming weeks and months that we are able to shore up at least part of the offense, add some more defensive pieces. I kind of said this in the comments a little bit today and over the weekend that I don't think we've failed on the offensive end here, but I do think that overall it's been a lot harder to convince, you know, top flight offensive skill players out of college, out of high school, excuse me, to come to Syracuse since, like, really for a while, but since Dino took over too, which is unfortunate given the kind of offensive expertise that was brought in. And now I feel like this time around, I feel like we did aim high and we had other targets, you know, further down the list. All the high targets, I felt like, committed pretty quickly. I know I mentioned like last week, we had like, I think almost every one of the top 15 rated guys who had an offer at wide receiver from us was already committed by like March, which is not great. But at the same time, like we are casting a wide net here. So hoping that SU's made some good inroads, because it seems like on the defensive side they have, but hoping on the offensive side too, they made some good inroads with a bunch of guys who were able to help fill out this class on the offensive end. I think we could really use some help both in the trenches, where I think things were addressed well last offseason, as well as like really at receiver, maybe not quarterback this time around, but, you know, we could always use another running back with McDowell being the only one in the door right now. So in general, things are going all right. We're still like a fringe top 60 team for 2022, but the only rankings that really matter are like if we can get ourselves into the top 50, you know, come December in the early signing period.
Yeah, it is a kind of an interesting breakdown with just the one offensive player, Luqman Allen, at running back. Obviously, this class will end up looking much differently by the time that December rolls around and the early signing period rolls around. Like, you expect it to be closer to 50-50, but there's clearly work to be done on the offensive end to balance this thing out. Like, not to diminish the role of getting like a bunch of new cornerbacks and a bunch of defensive linemen. You know, obviously we've had a lot of success at the defensive back position. We always talk about how crucial it is to make sure you have guys ready at the defensive line. So certainly good things. Like, we should be excited about getting Kier Price, but you know, you still want to make sure that you're replenishing the offense, especially because like it's not like the offense has really proven itself to be like well stocked recently. Like, obviously we have some interesting guys. We talked about the running backs last week. But you know, we definitely need more receivers. We could definitely use another quarterback, as we've talked about the last couple of weeks. Offensive line, you always want to take a good group of those guys. So still plenty of work to be done.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, there are no, like, Taj Harris, I think, would be. I mean, Quayle did a great job last year, but I think Taj Harris is really the only receiver entrenched right now. And if we want to add a four-star wideout, I don't think anyone's going to say no. And I think a lot of people would put him on the short list for starting. Going to this next year, I think there's a lot of young talent, though. You know, guys like Damian Alford, who I know have like had some quality reviews over the offseason. Like, there's definitely options for young guys to step up. I think we'd just rather avoid having to have young guys step up all the time, or at least young guy, like three-star young guys, no offense, step up all the time and be able to bring in like, hey, this guy is the biggest name in this class, and he's going to come in and potentially contend for all conference honors and really light it up for us. And, like, you know, maybe that's a guy, I mean, again, it could be a guy like Harris who really burst onto the scene as a three-star. Could be a guy like Steve Ishmael or Irvin Phillips or all these other guys who we coached up into three-star, from three-stars into all-conference caliber players. But it would certainly be a bigger relief for me as a fan, and I'm sure you and other SU fans as well, if we had some four-star talent at the receiver position in particular that we could plug in, feel really good about for the next 3 years. And not feel like we have some like questions further down the depth chart still.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's great to coach guys up. It you know, it feels good as fans to like watch the guys that you remember signing in on signing day to like become really good players by their, you know, midway through their sophomore years or junior years. But it's also just nice to plug and play guys. Like, you know, it's you can just admit it. Like it's nice to have like really great talented players out of the box and kind of blending those two things. And like, you know, some guys are just not always going to develop the way that you hope. And some guys, you know, just may, you know, develop more quickly, but you need to have a blend, I think, especially as a Syracuse program. You can't just rely on like 3 and 4 year players because, you know, there's just going to be a percentage of them that don't hit right away. So if you can get a couple of those plug and play pieces, whether or not they're 4 or 5 star players, like there might be a 3 star, like, I mean, on the defensive side, Andre Sisto was like clearly a plug and play player for us. We didn't realize it at the time, but I'm sure this coaching staff had a better idea. But it's definitely you want to blend the two and have some of those like ready to put in the starting lineup look like a player from day one guys, because it just takes a lot of stress off of the developmental angle. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes guys just aren't ready to play in the ACC, and that's going to be something that you have to deal with as a Syracuse type program. But when that's like the entire strategy and the entire way in which you are adding like pieces, it's going to be tough to just like year over year make sure you manufacture those tens of players. So, yeah, hopefully we can continue to raise the talent level. So far, you know, things are just kind of trending the way they have, and that's been fine in years past. We always talked about that the last couple of years ago that came right in and helped us get to that 10-win season. But that's also kind of a rare thing. You don't want to rely on that exclusively. So, you know, hopefully the next couple of months bring some more good news on the offensive side, and we'll, you know, we can feel pretty good about where things are.
I would agree. Dan, we kind of had like a shorter episode today, so why don't we talk a little halftime, and then we can move on to talking about Black Widow, probably, along with some other sort of topics.
Cool. Yeah. So I was in Philadelphia this weekend. We stopped at Evil Genius on Saturday, which was a really nice stop, pretty comprehensive, had some tasters, had some full pints. Pretty much everything was good. Evil Genius is a really quality brewery. I guess the highlights, there's No Crying in Baseball IPA, just really solid, standard, drinkable IPA. Also their Baby Shark, right along the same lines, more of a pale ale. I think the highlight for me from them was the QR What You Drink IPA, which was a little more hazy. I thought a little more full flavored than some of the other things I had. Had their Trust the Process, another IPA. They had a bunch of those, and then a number of other sours, and I believe had a copper as well. This is another one. I'm sure every Philadelphia brewery has a Trust the Process beer. I imagine that's just kind of required. And then we also popped over to a dive bar where I ran into some Shiner Ruby Redbirds, which are for occasional dive bar drinking. We can find those for like $3 a pop. Always a nice delight for the grapefruit fans out there from Spatial Brewing. So yeah, solid weekend overall. Just tested probably almost everything on tap at Evil Genius, which made for an interesting Sunday morning, but happy to do it. So shout out to those guys.
Hey, perhaps. Pretty light weekend on my end. I'm kind of saving up for next weekend in Chicago. But did have a couple things at a Rothaus Pils, just German Pilsner, had an Erdinger Hef. I was at a German sausage and beer bar, so I had a couple different things. And a Paulaner Salvatore Doppelbach. Also had at my house on Friday night, had a Tilador Lacon. It was a fruited sour from them with organic apricots. So overall, a lighter weekend, but plenty going on next weekend. So I feel like it was worth taking a little easy.
For sure. It's always nice when you have a trip on the horizon and some big brewery stops. So I'm sure you'll do it up in Chicago for sure.
Yeah, I got quite a few. I think Friday's going to be the beer tour. And we got baseball game on Saturday. And
Ridley, I assume?
No, actually. Going to be at going to be a Guaranteed Rate. Let's go.
All right.
The first time seeing the White Sox. I've been to Wrigley. I actually saw the Mets at Wrigley like 6 years ago. And this time around, my buddy actually has company tickets for the White Sox. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
I have not been to either. I went to Chicago a couple years ago, but did not sneak in a baseball game. So hopefully next time, because I would like to get a more – that was a very quick trip. I would like to get a more full trip. Wrigley's definitely on the short list.
Wrigley is probably like one of the coolest places. This is probably the coolest place I've ever seen a baseball game.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, and obviously I'd love to do the White Sox as well. I will always go check out any park. We're locked in. I'm going to Denver next month, so I'm going to do a Coors, which will be fun. But yeah, I'd love to get to all 30 at some point. Obviously, a long way away there though.
Yeah, I'm not that far on that list. I have in my other list of like, have I seen the team live? And with the White Sox checked off this week, I'll be only a four teams left that I haven't seen live.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Maybe only that's definitely.
It's not as conventional of a list. I figured I'd start with that one in my head and then kind of go from there.
I'd have to just tap into the memory banks. I've seen so many Mets teams, but I'm sure I've gotten, if not the entire NL, like a large chunk of it. And I've been to like a number of Yankees games as well. So that one I'm much farther along on.
Well, it's helpful. Yeah, like for me, I've only lived in NL cities. Well, I mean, like New York was an AL and NL city, but like growing up, I didn't spend a lot of time going to Mets and Yankees games. And then out here, I've lived in two NL cities, but the only teams left are Boston, Tampa, Detroit, and Cleveland after the White Sox game.
Excuse me, they are the Los Angeles Angels. So I don't know what you're talking about. That is an AL city as well.
I actually might go down to Anaheim for a game in a couple months. I mean, it's cheap. And you can bring the kids and like nobody really cares. So it's a little bit easier. Nice. But yeah, I'll
probably get an Ohtani game. You'll be all set.
That's what I'm hoping. You can get like the Rangers game in like a couple months. There's one game, I think, on a Sunday that's like you can get in for like $12. So
nice.
I might check that out. Anyway, for the rest of the time, however brief it may be, I think we talk a little bit about Black Widow since you ended up being able to see it. Dan, so I guess what were your initial thoughts? I know for some listeners, you might have already seen some of my thoughts on the article. So give Dan some space to talk about the movie and what it accomplished and what maybe it didn't.
We're doing spoilers here, right? We're spoiler friendly.
At this point, this is the last spoiler warning that this is not one of those situations where we're going to talk about a movie without talking about what actually happened in it.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was a really just, you know, solid down the middle Marvel movie. I think most Marvel movies, the floor is just very high, and like some of them end up having like a really high ceiling as well. But, you know, so many of them, it's just like a, you know, really good, solid movie. It's a theater experience. Happy to have seen it. B+. I thought this fit in that like kind of Ant-Man world where like it's not the most conventional, what we would have thought of like 10, 15 years ago of like, oh my God, they're making a movie about this character. But now they've kind of proven the concept with basically anyone they want to roll out there. So, and obviously Black Widow has more of an established movie presence because she's been around since the first Avengers. Second Iron Man. I thought it was really solid. I didn't totally know what to expect going in just because they're her character, and not to the character's fault, but like, you know, I think it's gotten less backstory and less attention. And this is well documented and chronicled by so many others, but like then even some of the other secondary characters. I thought this really fleshed out a lot. I really enjoyed what we got from Florence Pugh, who I hope, and based on the post-credit scene, I think will see her a lot more. And she's great in everything. She's just a really great actress. I thought David Harbour was great. I thought they both brought like a really nice kind of comic sensibility to an otherwise like pretty serious character. At least through like what we've seen from the movies before, everything was really well executed. I know there's a lot of like Taskmaster discussion. I'm not a comics person, so I don't really have a ton of background on what that character is supposed to be. But I know people have complained about that, and I didn't think it was the strongest like, you know, big bad, or at least one of the big bads in the movie that we've seen. But overall, I thought it was very effective. I just really wish it could have been done in sequence because I think it would have made Endgame like so much more powerful if we had this kind of background with the Black Widow character more than we already did. So that's definitely the gripe, and it's kind of confusing as to why they did the things the way they did. Obviously there was a lot of pressure on them afterwards, but I am glad overall they got the movie. And then if we had gotten the movie earlier, I don't know that we would have gotten Florence Pugh in there, since she is like quite young and fresh to the scene. So maybe it's kind of like some things take away, but other things, like if that ends up becoming a pretty substantial character going forward for the MCU, it could end up being kind of a backhanded win.
Yeah. I mean, from a universe setup standpoint, I think it worked in that regard. Obviously if you do it in sequence after Civil War, where it would have slotted in, you don't get the Pugh introduction at all with Yelena. You also don't get the kind of motivating force going forward for the character, because there is no gravesite to visit in the deleted scene. There's no Julia Louis-Dreyfus there to egg her on. There's no reference to, you know, Clint. And I mean, weird in some ways that the framing is that Hawkeye is responsible for her death, but they also need a reason for people to tune into Hawkeye other than just a handoff to his own handoff to a new character. So that conflict now becomes like a central part of at least the start of the show, even if not the finale.
Also, like, just based on reactions to the movie and reactions to Hawkeye in general, is anyone going to be rooting for Hawkeye in that series?
No, I mean, everyone just wants Hawkeye to get kicked so that they hand the show off to Kate Bishop. And I believe Echo is in that one. For those who are into more like, not deep cuts comic wise, but at least like lesser known characters to the general population. Echo someone who's going to feature prominently there and might have some additional burn beyond the series, which is great.
It definitely made me more interested. I was going to watch it anyway. I mean, episode behind on Loki because I was out of the, you know, I was out of town over the weekend and haven't had a chance to watch the last Loki.
Real tour de force.
Yes, I've heard. And I don't think all the shows have like been 100% like smash hits. I think they've all had like really good moments and some moments were like you wish there was a little bit more from them. But in terms of like interest, I probably would have had less interest in a Hawkeye series than the other three going in. And this definitely helps bring at least like the pre-series interest like up to the level of some of the rest. So hopefully that's a big boon for them, but it definitely made me more excited for that, since Hawkeye is just like, he's a fine character, but like,
Renner is who he is.
Renner is who he is. I hope he does a soundtrack for it.
But like pulls up in a car commercial for it too.
Oh God. Yeah. So I think that's going to be like Renner's there and everyone's kind of orbiting him. And those might be the highlights of it. Versus like Loki, where there's such like Tom Hiddleston magnetism and just a great character like in the center. I feel like it's going to be more like Falcon and Winter Soldier, where, you know, where I think it's going to be like they're at the center of things, but it's kind of everything that's happening around them. Because I know people have missed opinions of both those characters, not as much as Hawkeye, but yeah, overall, I think it was an effective movie. Wish we had done it for the story, I wish we had done it earlier. Obviously, things may not have played out as cleanly had that been the case for stuff going forward, but glad we got it overall. Definitely enjoyed it. Thought it was a good theater experience. I've never been twice in the last couple. Actually, I've been three times in the last couple weeks. Didn't back into that. So, yeah, happy to have Marvel movies back. And it did feel like you can kind of tell the difference after just seeing the shows for a couple months now. Like, oh, yeah, the movies are very big. Like, the movies just – the shows are good, and they've done a really nice job with that whole part of this experience. But the movies just really take things to another level, even the, like – less huge movies like a Black Widow, the standalones. So yeah, really enjoyed it overall. Solid, like probably like a 7.5 out of 10 BB plus. You know, if you love the Marvel movies, like you're probably gonna go see it anyway, but it holds up for the rest of it, for the rest of the general world for sure.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think while it wasn't like a great movie to me, like I think it was fine. I think it performed expectations. I give it like a B- maybe. I think that where it excelled is that it didn't require the homework that most Marvel movies need, especially like phase three that we just got out of. And really even like the shows like Loki, it still needs some homework, even though it's the least homework driven of the three shows. Like for the movies, almost everything in phase three needed homework, to really port yourself into that, you know, Black Panther probably being like an exception there. I think that this was basically a like, you know, Bourne / like modern Bond movie, villain and all, meets like some Marvel shtick, and you put that together and you really, again, you introduce a character, you introduce stakes, you introduce you know, a couple challenges along the way, some humor. I think some solid action scenes overall. I mean, the budget for this was significantly lower than you'd see on like most Marvel movies, really. I think most of it was burned on the floating, the latest floating fortress crashing to the ground. But yeah, like realistically, I thought it didn't require a ton of like that. There wasn't a big barrier to entry. And as a result though, and as a result of the fact that like we know the fate of Natasha, going in, there were almost no stakes because you knew ultimately that she was going to win. You knew ultimately that she was not going to die. You already knew because of the casting in Hawkeye that Yelena was going to end up taking on the mantle. So I guess like part of that's COVID related. Part of that's just because they decided it had to happen out of chronological sync, is that you ended up with this kind of with the first really, you know, stakesless Marvel movie where you're like, eh, like, like I was fine with it. I enjoyed it. I'd watch it again. But like I didn't have to get that same buzz afterward of like, oh, what happens next? What about this? What about this? What about this? It was very much a like, all right, great. We finally got the Black Widow movie done. like glad we did that. Like, now can't wait for Shang-Chi so that I can see like where the story progresses from here, like in theaters.
That's a pretty fair point. It was a weird situation in that, like, while not every Marvel movie is like, you know, Game of Thrones where you don't know what's going to happen, obviously the you know, big two-parter did have those stakes, at least to an extent. It did remove like any kind of drama over, you know, where the character could go, what, you know, just we all know, like we've seen it. So yeah, it was definitely more of the intrigue was around like, how do they connect this back, how do they set up stuff going forward, and even that there was much less except for the after credit scene. So yeah, it definitely removed part of that for it, but I also agree that it was definitely more accessible than most of what we had, especially in phase three, because that was so much about like gearing up for the end, right? Versus
this,
like, yeah,
this is a standalone universe. This was you could literally just sit there and go, this Black Widow story matters in this universe, and you could walk away from it. And that's a major complaint of like folks who aren't big Marvel fans. It is the homework required and the investment required. But I also think those same fans might find this movie to have been like kind of like once they knew, like if you told somebody that didn't really care about the Marvel movies, oh, this character's been dead. They're like, oh, okay, so why the fuck do I care about this?
Yeah, that's fair. I do. It is funny that there were like so few references to like outside stuff, aside from I think a couple stray references to Cap, that like it did feel very removed. Like obviously there were like things here and there about like where they were in the timeline to get, you know, people just to tee people in on where what was going on, but you really could drop pretty much anyone into that movie and it would have been totally fine. Like I'm thinking about like if I had just like brought my parents to that movie, who have seen probably 1.5 Marvel movies between them, they would have like very little issue following what was going on. So I guess, you know, like you said, that's kind of an upside downside thing depending on who you're talking to. But in terms of like the Marvel, the MCU audience, like I think that's a strong enough, they have a strong enough hold on those people that they're not going to like super freak out long term about what, you know, maybe they thought was an underwhelming single Black Widow movie. So I do, it was probably, I made it with the right play, especially because you have this like, a 2-year audience in terms of people who haven't been to a Marvel movie in the theaters. Maybe the people are just aging into it. It might not have been the worst idea to have a more like standard, straightforward type experience for this like first Marvel movie back. And rather, they couldn't have planned that out, but it just kind of worked out that way. Maybe like having kind of like a one-on-one level in terms of all of the connections and all of the homework, as you've said, that you usually need to do for these movies. Having this be the first one back kind of like eases people into the experience, especially if you have like, you know, people who were 7 years old when the last Marvel movie was in theaters. Now maybe they're of age where they can go in and appreciate it. And this might help kind of bring along the next set of fans, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable. It's a good point there too. And now I've kind of, a lot of people have been talking about the Taskmaster stuff. And I know as a comic reader, I was bummed about it. Not because, I think some might've been bummed because of the gender change. Actually, the gender change was a great point. I would have liked to see Taskmaster less of a tech-based villain and more based on the character that Tony Masters is in the comics, where he has a photographic memory that allows him to mimic fighting styles. And I felt like that's a more interesting villain in a lot of ways. And I did feel like even given the background they provided the character in the movie with Draco's daughter, I ultimately felt like she was very underutilized and kind of used as a bit of an emotional prop in some ways, which is a bummer. The other thing that a lot of people talked about, and I know I did in the article we wrote in the blog, was the, how did you feel about the breathy Smells Like Teen Spirit cover?
Oh, that, I was proud about that.
I had some thoughts that evoked like Grey's Anatomy circa like 2012.
Who did it? I meant to look it up, but it was like so early in the movie that it was not top of mind. Do we know who the cover was by?
I didn't, because my sister was out here and we were watching at home and we were both kind of like lampooning it.
I'm looking it up now. I mean, it felt very like mid-2000s. It's by someone named Malia J. So yeah, no idea. Oh god, this is so sad.
Oh no.
There's a Screen Rant SEO post about this. It does get to the who sang the cover, but the first sentence of the title is, "What song plays over Black Widow's opening credits?" And that's a totally fair thing to write, but man,
I mean, of all the songs you can't recognize.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, so many of the people have no idea who even Nirvana is. But that's a tough one. Yeah, I'd have to listen to it again, but it wasn't like it felt just like very much like movie trailer in 2013 to me, which made it like feel a little like out of era, because that was like a thing we were doing for a lot of movies
from like probably like 2010 to like 2017. I felt like it was just the norm.
Yeah, the really slow muted cover of a famous song from like at least 20 years before. Son, usually by the opposite gender, usually it was a woman singing a male vocal part, and like in that exact style, and there are so many of those covers, and it felt like it did feel very out of era, even though that wasn't that long ago, because it's like that thing, whatever that was, just kind of faded from the current trends completely. So yeah, wasn't a huge fan, but also like it didn't make a huge impact on me either way. I kind of, you know, as I said, I kind of forgot it happened until you brought it up.
No, it's reasonable. It's just like, yeah, like the music, I just felt like since they made it in 1995, that's fine. They're going to make it 1995, then pick something from 1995.
Yeah, and that's also a strange choice. Like, that song's not from 95. That song, I mean,
it's 91, but like,
yeah.
And now, like, I'm talking to somebody in the comments now about it, and raises a good point that, like, it is a you know, iconic, like, American 90s song. I agree. But I do think, like, typically when you have a beat like that, and they do it later on, I forgot which pop song, when she's driving across the bridge, she's playing a song that is very definitively 2016, and it's a touch point musically to make sure you know you're in 2016. But I felt like this one was weird because it was very much not 1995, yet we did it anyway.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. I mean, and it's also just like it's such a big song, like, right. It almost would have worked better if it was like a 95 song that you almost had to look up if you weren't like a, you know, big 90s like rock fan.
Like something from Cake, do Pearl Jam, like there's do an Ohio
there were band. Options
do an Ohio band, even because she was from Ohio. Like I just felt like, yeah, there were options out there. Maybe if you wanted to make something more recognizable, I'm not going to Google this now, but I'm sure you could find the list of like 1995 like top songs, and you'd find something that like you ought to know is on there. Come on.
Yeah, definitely a weird choice, because like Smells Like Teen Spirit is so ubiquitous, and it's also just like one of the songs. There are some songs that I just think like cover, you shouldn't have people cover, and that's probably on that list. The one that always drives me nuts, and it's even though it doesn't drive me nuts, I actually like the singer a lot, is the Nicole Atkins cover of Heroes by David Bowie that was on the Heineken commercial that played a million times. I love Nicole Atkins. I also love Heroes by David Bowie. I don't want to hear anyone but David Bowie singing that song. Like, that's just on that list for me.
Reasonable.
Yeah, so Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's just doing Nirvana covers in general is tough. Like, that's a it's tough to get it right and have it sound okay.
Yeah. I think that's always the problem. It's like, unless you make it definitively your own, and I'd argue that they did make it definitively your own, just that some songs are too hard to overcome that. Just like, you can't help but think of the original. And I think this is just one of those songs, and especially in the context of like what they were trying to do with it. It just seemed like it's...
No, I agree.
Alas, this is what happens when a bit of a dead week, then you end up dissecting music choices in a blockbuster movie for...
We talk about a very, I mean, like, what, 45-second cover of Nirvana from the beginning of the movie that I kind of forgot happened by an artist that we don't know. So we have no, I don't even remember what the person's name is now.
A clear homage to The Americans.
Yes. Also, yeah, go watch The Americans if you haven't. If you enjoyed Black Widow to any extent, or if you didn't, go watch The Americans. On FX before. I don't know where you find it streaming now. I think it was on Amazon. Americans.
If it was on FX, and it's probably on Hulu at this point.
It may be on Hulu now. I know when it was still on and people were catching up, it was on Amazon.
Right.
FX has
all that inventory back now. They might.
I think they were probably working on it. I don't know if they were like, it's like exclusivity contracts they had to wait out. But alas, The Americans, one of the best shows of the post Breaking Bad era. Maybe the best. I'd put it probably top two or three. Yeah, go check that out if you haven't. If you're looking for a pretty long haul, really intense drama.
Yeah, that tells you, hey, this is what would have happened if they hadn't had to get on the plane in the movie.
Yes. It was funny that was like a kind of a direct, obviously that was a thing that was happening in real life, but like basically the same plot point as The Americans. So I was like, oh, that's familiar.
I know this.
I know this. Elizabeth Jennings, I think better than The Red Guardian at her job.
Reasonable. Dan, anything else before we depart today?
No, shout out to Italy for winning the Euros. Shout out to Pete Alonso for hopefully winning the Home Run Derby tonight. And yeah, shout out to Bayham's Army, but not till next week.
Forza Italia, Forza Alonso, go Mets, who are still in first place somehow.
Somehow, even though they split with the Pirates, which is embarrassing, but you know, move on. They did play 33 games in 31 days. I'm not going to get that worked up about it.
Yeah, realistically, I mean, if we were in a real division, it'd be problematic. But since we're not, we're the only competent team in the division, thankfully.
We'll take it. Indeed. And they were going to be buyers, so that's exciting. That wasn't happening in the old regime.
It's Chris Bryant time.
Let's do it.
Well, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Trending Snaps of the podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and Go Orange.
Go Orange.